This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Frank, you were not someone that was... Were you not someone that was gushing over the Cardinals bringing back Rosenthal? Yeah, I thought it'd be a good idea. But it's the first week of the season. We'll find out. It's not working out well. He's a great guy. I hope he does well, but it hasn't worked out well. Somebody asking if they think that if, let's see, who's a Hall of Famer? Yeah, Chris Bosh. He's been to 11 All-Star games and he won 2 World Championships. And is he a 2010 guy for his career? What's his career breed?
Just under. He is at 19.2 and 8.5.
Okay. Yeah, you're going to the Basketball Hall of Fame. And granted, I don't think he was ever like a superstar. But in those early years in Toronto, his stats was spectacular. Give me his best year.
Yeah, his best year ever was his last year in Toronto. He went for 24-11-3-1.
Wow.
And across his like best 5 year stretch in Toronto, he averaged 23-10, 2.5 assists and almost 2 blocks and steals combined. So yeah, he was a premier player in Toronto. There.
He will be in Springfield, Mass. After he earns his 5th MVP in 15 years, Jonte Porter will be the best lefty of all time. I love the optimism.
Now the one text, it did have a caveat of 2026. So, but he's been out now for 3 years, yeah. So he'll be eligible in like 2021. So he's got 5 votes to go through. I think you're probably going to lose that bet.
Come on, Slusamano, no love for Kevin Lish. Yeah, I like that. Lish and Liddell, both lefties. I love you, Daddy Padre, for bringing it up. That's good stuff. All right. The year was 1956, and it was the most jaw-dropping performance in the history of the World Series. This is how it ended. As we pick up this incredible call from the 1956 World Series, where a fellow named Don Larson was on the hill.
Got it!
The hitter that day on that final out was Dale Mitchell, who was one of the better hitters of his generation. A .312 lifetime average, a terrific player. Well, his son is Bo Mitchell, and he joins us now. He's written a book. It's called Grace Behind Bars. Bo, it's an honor to have you on the program. How are you today?
I'm great, and thank you very much for having me.
I have to tell you, I was just on a recent vacation, and we're reading books. My wife is reading your book, and I'm reading another book, and she says, you will not believe the book I'm reading. So I said, hurry up and finish it, because I want to read it. And then as soon as she handed it to me, I finished it in about 4 or 5 days. I recommend it for everybody, Grace Behind Bars. A little background first. Bo Mitchell was a terrific baseball player. In fact, you were in the Cardinal farm system. Any Cardinal player you played with that got to the big leagues?
Actually, thank you for saying that I was a terrific baseball player, but I was pretty crummy. I like to say I was great in high school, good in college, and not very good at all in the pros. But I played 2 years of A-ball, and in St. Petersburg with the St. Pete Cardinals, Keith Hernandez played with us that summer.
Wow.
And ended up being a pretty good hitter. In fact, that's kind of what helped me decide to quit baseball, was watching the difference between when I hit the ball and when Keith hit the ball. It sounded quite a bit different.
And you were also a basketball player, a two-sport star.
I did go to the University of Colorado on a basketball scholarship and started for 3 years and enjoyed basketball very much.
So you had this incredible life where you have this beautiful wife and healthy children. You're a successful businessman. You're a church founder, and then all of a sudden, something goes wrong. And I think the way to describe it is, it was a baffling criminal charge against you. Can you kind of explain it in as layman of terms as possible for our audience?
Well, I woke up one morning, in fact, it was like August 1st, 1991. I read my name in the paper. A friend of mine had pled guilty to bank fraud. He was the owner and president of a bank. And in the article, my name was mentioned. So not being one to shy away from whatever's coming at me in terms of problems, I called a friend of mine. We went downtown, met with the U.S. attorney, and the U.S. attorney said we would like Bo to put a wire on, and we would like him to get a couple of these guys that we're targeting for crimes to incriminate themselves. And I was, by then, I'd been the chaplain of the Denver Nuggets, associate pastor of a church. So I kind of laughed, which, by the way, is a stupid thing to do to the FBI or the U.S. attorney. I just laughed and said, look, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to tell you the truth, but I'm not going to slant the story to make your story better. The people you're targeting were friends of mine years ago. I haven't done anything with them in business for 7 years, but the government said, well, then we're going to fry you. And I learned the hard way that plea bargaining is a very tough proposition. It's almost like they go on a shopping spree through your life to find something you've done wrong. And in 1984, so 7 years prior to these meetings, I had borrowed some money to help my friends through a tough time in their business. And I had repaid the money, but the government found those loans and said what I had done was called straw borrowing. In other words, I was a middleman when the loans were actually taken out for them. They first accused me of falsifying a loan application. I kept saying there was no loan application. I just signed two notes, used my lines of credit to borrow money and help my friends. But the government pushed that issue and technically said it doesn't matter if you paid the money back or not, you still broke the law. The statute said that I procured, induced, and counseled the commission of a bank fraud by borrowing that money from my friends. I said the whole meeting took 10 minutes. How could I counsel, procure, and induce bank fraud in 10 minutes? But the attorneys advised me to plead guilty, sign my name, and go on with my life. Everybody said there's no money lost. You won't have a fine. You'll get probation, and don't let the government just harass you for another couple of years. Just take that course of least resistance, which I did. Everybody got the message, but the judge, we went into the court for kind of a formal hearing just to, you know, I was still stupid enough to think the judge was going to say, keep up the good work in the community, Mr. Mitchell. Sorry for the inconvenience. And then give me probation like they had promised. But instead he said, I understand Mr. Mitchell was just trying to help his friends. He did say there'll be no fine in this case because there was no money lost. But the most lenient I could be is to sentence you, sir, to 11 months in federal prison.
Now, how do you not, because I know you're a man of faith, how do you not hate Judge Nottingham? How do you not want terrible things to happen in his life? Because throughout the book, you kind of turn the other cheek. And even when he had problems later in his life, you didn't gloat about it. How do you not hate in that situation?
Well, I had been trained and believed that when bad things happen, you either rebel against God or you surrender. And I told my family, you know, your dad apparently, without knowing it, has done some stupid things here to put our family in a bad position. And I said, no matter what happens in the courtroom, you go up and tell the prosecutor thank you, because he had really, Bill had done a fair job of treating us respectfully and with integrity, which was all we were trying to do also. But I guess the answer is we made it a God deal. Anything that's a God deal will ultimately wind up a good deal. And anything that's not a God deal will ultimately wind up a bad deal. So Ed Nottingham was just someone that happened to be one of the players that God chose to bring into our lives, exactly what I needed. And from the very first moment of that sentencing, I was being shown that I went to prison because of pride and ego and self-effort and an independent streak, even towards God. I mean, I used to have the thought, if you can believe this, Frank, I used to have the thought, God is sharp for picking me because I will deliver on whatever he wants. If it's a church or a camp for inner city kids or whatever. And that is just, you know, arrogant Christian jerk, I guess is what I was. And I hate to say that the method of sifting that was perfect for me was federal prison, but I was just going too fast, thought I knew too much. Everything I did seemed to work, except what wasn't working was me. I didn't understand how unsafe I was to my family, especially my wife and daughter, because 150 miles an hour was not healthy for everybody, including me. So God, in his kindness, extended to me what I needed, which was a trip to federal prison. So I just viewed Ed Nottingham as one of the players that God brought into my path to get me where he wanted me.
What's it like when that cell shuts? And here you are, you live this idyllic life where money's not an issue, these healthy kids, this beautiful wife, all this success. Then all of a sudden, the cell shuts and you're in a federal prison.
Well, it's very humbling, that's for sure, because it's scary. It's not like I went to a, you know, white collar camp with a bowling alley and a barbershop. It was the real deal. And 6x9 cell, you've painted a good picture there. When that door slams, you're thinking your life's over. And I thought, man, I must really be boneheaded for this to be what God has chosen for me. But in spite of that, it kind of cuts everything away and you get down to just you and God. And whether you're facing a divorce or a financial crisis or your doctor called you and said, you know, you've got cancer and you've got 6 months to live, whatever it is, it definitely causes you, if you're in Christ and have had people point you to Christ and things of his kingdom, it causes you to pay attention. And I really, from the first moment that door slammed, I just fell on my knees and said, Lord, I want to learn every lesson you have for me to learn through this. I want to keep my mouth shut. I want to follow the rules. I want to be your man. So let's go. Let's not miss anything.
And in prison, when you thought that the instances could get nasty or really violent, you diffused it right away. You were never beaten up, and you thought there was a chance that there was going to be an occasion, but you diffused it like right away.
Well, the sweet lady Cindy, when I was being they call A and O, admission and orientation, she said, "Do you have any questions?" And I said, when do I get raped and when do I get beat up? And she took her reading glasses off and said, you're serious, aren't you? And I said, yes, that's about the most serious question I've ever asked. And she gave me great instruction. She just said, keep your mouth shut. If you see it, you don't really see it. If you hear it, you didn't hear it. Mind your own business. She said, you won't feel like yourself except maybe 5 minutes a day. And her instruction helped me, but frankly, I hadn't thought about this, but the first couple weeks, the first week I was there, there were four times I was confronted with what could have ended up in a physical fight. And yes, each time I just had the words from God or something to defuse it and step away. But after that first few weeks, you really do get an understanding. And if you slug somebody in prison, they're not going to ask whose fault it was. You're just going to go deeper in the system. They're probably going to tack another year or two on your sentence. And it's best in prison just to toe the line, follow the rules, and cooperate.
You don't hold anything back in the book. I mean, here you are, a former Division I basketball player and baseball player, and yet you reveal in the book that you literally cried every day for years.
my friend that owns the Colorado Rockies, he read the manuscript, Dick Monfort, and I said, you know, it's just manuscript phase of this book. You got any ideas? And he says, Bo, it seems like you're crying on every page of the book. So we called the editor and said, Julie, go back and do a word check here and see how many times we use the word cry. But yeah, I did. I was broken, and I wasn't afraid. I wasn't embarrassed. I was just broken. I cried for probably, I don't know, a good year after prison every day. I just felt like crying. I thought I disappointed everybody, and there was a brokenness there. But one of the inmates who was just having fun with me, a guy named John, he would say, Bo, it's not good to cry every single day in front of the boys here. But they knew I wasn't afraid. They knew I was just having a spiritual interaction with God, and the way it was expressed was tears.
So now when somebody asks Bo Mitchell how he's doing, your response is, and why?
You really did read that book, Frank.
Yes, sir.
I woke up August 1st, 1994, and I thought, you know, I'm so sick of the sound of my own voice. I'm so sick of my story. I'm sick of coming across as a victim, because that's almost a sickness in our society, that the feeling of being a victim. So I thought, I got to snap out of this. If anybody asks me today how I'm doing, I'm going to say never better, because spiritually I had been never better. I was back with my family. I was getting back on my feet in terms of having a job and paying my bills finally. But I just decided I need to start feeding myself mentally a little better than I was feeding myself when I was crying every single day. So never better has lasted all these years, and I still say it. In fact, yesterday at the ballpark, the Braves are in town playing the Rockies, and I saw a couple of guys used to be with us, Walt Weiss, Eric Young, Charlie Culberson, and each of them came up to me, never better, and gave me a big hug. So they had all been chapel guys with the Rockies, where I do chapel now, but it was fun seeing them and hearing them say never better.
Any talk of a movie out of this book?
I think the book, I hope the book has another season, actually, because it came out a couple years ago and it did quite well. We've heard from different parts of the country, from different folks, how much the book has helped them through their own problems. In fact, I got a letter last week from a guy just being released from prison that said he got a copy of the book in prison, and it helped him to not waste his pain, but to really maximize his time there. So we're just hoping the book may have another life. My wife spoke last year for Kay Arthur at her national event, and I'd like to distribute another 50,000 copies to people if it would help them, because most people, Frank, as you know, are in some form of prison, not literally, but just something that's got them trapped, and they can't break free of it. And our book is pretty easy read. It's just us talking and our story. And if it can help anybody, we want to get it in as many hands as possible. But a movie, I don't think so.
The name of the book is Grace Behind Bars. And just living that life of, like, today, all of us, we got bad bosses sometimes, too much work, maybe trouble at home. If we just kind of live by that never better, it's not a bad way to go through a time period, like for 24 hours. Try it for a day and then do it the next day and see if it just keeps going and going. It's just such an honor to have you on the program. I got to tell you this too, Bo. My wife, who's not a sports fan at all, and I've been doing this for 26 years, has never listened to the program, and this is the first time she's ever listened, because I said, I'm going to have Bo Mitchell on the radio today. So,
well, tell her I'm honored to be her first. But you're very good at what you do, Frank, and it's been a privilege to chat with you for a minute. And let's hope we help somebody that's out there feeling like things are never going to get better, because they will get better. In fact, I wanted to title the book Never Better, but Focus on the Family said, no, it's not not intriguing enough. We need to go with grace behind bars. But you're a great host. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Bo, thank you, sir. We will take a short time out. This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. We'll be right back.